It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with the writer and director of a new feature film called Working Man, inspired by the blue-collar workers of Iowa's river towns. But first, Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard signs off this week. For the past 20 years, he's been an important part of public radio in the state, first hosting programs at WOI Radio in Ames, and then transitioning into a reporter role as Iowa Public Radio became a statewide network. As he retires, we're going to take a look back at his eclectic career that led him to public radio eventually and the work he's done telling Iowa's stories. If you would like to share a favorite memory of Rob's work, we'd love to hear from you this hour. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or give us a call at 866-780-9100. Rob Dillard, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Charity. I wish I were in a studio with you.
I wish that, too. It would be wonderful to have you here. But congratulations on your retirement. I know it must be very strange. We're kind of a socially distant network anyway. I'm in Iowa City. You work in Des Moines. We have studios in Ames and Cedar Falls and Sioux City. And so we're not together a lot as it is, but it must be really strange to be retiring amidst this pandemic and not be seeing your coworkers.
Oh, I thought there would be hugs and toasts involved, and they're just not any of that going on. But it's time for me to move on and explore this next phase of my life.
Well, we will have hugs and toasts and tears later. We're just going to put that on pause. But Rob, I do want to take a look back, and we are going to spend most of our time today talking about your work in radio. But I want to go way back. I know you grew up in Indianola, but tell me where you first thought you would spend your professional life.
I was bitten by the theater bug when I was a very young man, and it was odd. I was watching the end of Homeland last night. I was at the University of Kansas when Mandy Patinkin was a student there, so he was a classmate of mine at the University of Kansas for a brief period. I ended up on the East Coast in Maine, first attending a workshop, summer workshop, for mime, if you can believe. Yes, I'm the brunt of a joke about a mime being on the radio.
So a professional mime is what you were hoping to be.
Yes, I was there for a six-week workshop, and at the end of it, the director of it said that he was forming a troupe of players that would tour the country, and he invited me to be part of that. So I was a part of what was called the Celebration Mime Theater from 1973 to about 1978. It was based in a small town in Maine.
You must have been a pretty good mime.
I have some movement abilities still. You can see it in my Zumba dancing.
What makes a good mime? What are the characteristics?
We focused on character, being able to imagine that you can do anything. And it's a lot of magical faking it on stage. It's the ability to think that you're being floated in the air, hanging onto a balloon, or you're playing a professional wrestler. I was in a routine in which I played the bad guy in a wrestling match, and it's that ability to imagine you can be any character and do anything that would seem physically impossible on stage in front of an audience and entertain them in that way.
Now, you spent, as you said, several years working as a mime, and then the next step was journalism? How did that work?
I returned to my home state. I had come within 1 year of a journalism degree, and I returned to Iowa City to the university there and completed my broadcast journalism degree.
All right. So clearly you were never driven by fortune, but we're glad that you found your way to journalism. And tell me about your early time as a journalist. That led you to Clinton, Iowa, right?
My first job was at KLNT Radio in Clinton, 1979. Those who live in Clinton and are native of Clinton know that was a pivotal year for that city. It was a time when the Clinton corn plant, the workers there went on strike, and that was a move that divided that town in many ways, divided families. And it was, so I was there during perhaps the key year in the history of Clinton.
Wow, that must have been an incredible moment to be there. Although you were working for, I think, an underfunded, understaffed commercial radio station. So that must have been a really intense introduction to professional journalism.
I was up at 4 a.m. on the air by 5 a.m., hosting newscasts throughout the entire morning, and then attending city council meetings and school board meetings at night. Very little sleeping going on during that year.
So you ended up returning to Central Iowa. As I mentioned, you grew up in Indianola. And what did you do for the next few years?
Well, I was brought back to Des Moines to work for a news service that supplied material for small town radio stations across the state. And I was hired to be the State House legislative reporter. And this would have been in August of, must have been 1980. By December of that year, that news service had disappeared. It closed down. So I worked for 3 months for this news service and never did cover a legislative session. That job ended before I even started what I had been hired to do.
So your path toward Iowa Public Radio was not a direct path by any means.
No.
You ended up working for a college as well, right?
I did. Central College. Well, actually, a couple colleges. What is now known as Des Moines University is the School of Osteopathic Medicine in Des Moines. I worked there for a few years, and then I went to Central College in Pella and commuted from Des Moines to Pella for another 4 or 5 years, primarily handling the media relations aspects of the school, but also writing personality profiles of alumni, professors, students.
What brought you to Iowa Public Radio? And of course, this was before Iowa Public Radio, but what brought you to WOI?
A phone call from a friend who was an underwriting executive for WOI. I also worked briefly for WHO Radio, a commercial station here in Des Moines. And he called and said, "I have vague memories of you being on the radio." And I said, "Well, yeah, very long time ago." And he said, "Would you consider applying for the job of the morning edition host at WOI?" And I go, it's been ages since I've done anything like that. And I have no tape to let you hear. No one will know how I can handle that job. And he said, "Oh, come on, please, just give it a shot." So I took the newspaper and I cut out articles and rewrote them into what I considered radio style, and went to a studio in West Des Moines owned by a friend of mine and said, "Would you mind taping me as I pretend to deliver a newscast?" And for whatever reason, that worked.
Well, and I was part of that chain reaction that led to you going to WOI, because you started at WOI Radio just as I left for Michigan.
Right.
And as I left, Catherine Perkins moved into the role that I had been holding at WOI, and she had been the morning edition host. So that was the hole that you wound up filling. And I'm so glad that you did. And you, you started at WOI at a moment where there were some really incredible broadcasters on staff. Tell me a little bit about what it was like to enter that environment with Don Forsling on the air on WOI FM and AM, and Karen Bryan on WOI FM. Tell me about that.
It was kind of intimidating, actually, because they were veteran broadcasters with a distinct style on the air that had always completely beguiled me. And as I say, it's been decades since I had been on the air. So I'm going in the morning, and on the other side of the window is Don Forsling, legendary figure in public broadcasting in the state of Iowa. And he's sounding so natural and so funny and telling these stories and introducing little pieces. And I'm shaking like a leaf on the other side of the window going, I can't match that. But I gave it a go. During that time, we would, of course, as always, public radio raising money and to share the mic with these people and to deliver pitches asking for membership support was rather, you know, I was very scared by it at first. I came to love it because having that connection with the listeners is remarkable, as you well know. But in the early days, it was a little distracting to be with these people.
Well, you must have really wanted to be there, though, because you were Morning Edition host, which is not an easy job for anyone really at any time of life, because it involves getting up really, really early in the morning and having a schedule that matches no other schedules of anyone you love in your life. And you were commuting from Indianola. So to be a Morning Edition host, what time did you get up?
I was up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
So tell me, well, we may not have time right now before the break, but what made you want to be in public radio so badly?
I had always wanted to be surrounded by creative people. That's what drew me to theater. It's what drew me into broadcast radio. I had always wanted to be surrounded by an art form that talked about culture, what's going on in the world. All of that had appealed to me from a very young age. And when I arrived in public radio, I realized I'd found what I'd been wanting to do for 30 years.
I'm so glad you found a home here, Rob. We are going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard. He retires this week, and we're taking a look back over his career. We'll talk about some of his career highlights in a moment, including being in Iowa, a really powerful series. He was the creative brain behind. And you're welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me is Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard. For the last 20 years, he's been an important part of public radio in Iowa, and this week he retires. So we're taking an opportunity to take a look back over his career. You're welcome to join the conversation as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Rob, just before the break, we were talking about when you found your home at WOI and in public radio. And you were Morning Edition host for a while. You also hosted this program, Talk of Iowa, when it was on the air at WOI for a while, at least during Catherine Perkins' maternity leaves.
That's right.
And then beautiful girls. As
beautiful girls.
Iowa Public Radio became a network, you were a little bit adrift. You were nervous about finding a place. Tell me how you found your role for Iowa Public Radio.
Well, I first off, I knew going the route we did with Iowa Public Radio, a statewide network, I knew that was the right thing to do. It was going to give us a chance to cover this beautiful state in a much more thorough way. The problem was that I didn't know quite where I was going to fit into that. I knew I was no longer going to be a host of a magazine program like Morning Edition or All Things Considered. They'd made that clear to me that I wouldn't be there. I have this love, as I've expressed, for art and culture, and I thought maybe I could fit into that role, just focusing on that area. And I was told, no, that we'll find someone else to do that. But fortunately, they decided that by moving me to Des Moines, I could find a role as a correspondent or a reporter. Just kind of general assignment, you know, no specific beat, but just covering whatever touched my fancy. Well, that's a great job.
That's a dream job.
That's a dream job, to be told that, you know, whatever comes across your interest, go for it. And I go, all right. Plus, I'm moving back to Des Moines, so I don't have that commute anymore. It worked beautifully for me, and I felt so rested, for one thing, and comfortable in that role. And again, it was doing something I had long wanted to do anyway.
So that gave you an opportunity to really pursue your passions. And I just want to point this out to anybody listening right now whose career has also gone on a long and circuitous route. I mean, you were not at the beginning of your career when you really found this perfect role for yourself.
I was hired at WI when I was 50 years old. I moved into this transition role here in Des Moines at, 55? Oddly, Charity, as I looked back at some of my work over the last few years, many of the stories I've gone after have been about young people, and I'm not one of them. And I don't have children, but I have long been fascinated by the lives of young people. And so that became a strong interest for me, as well as some of the other things we've mentioned with being in Iowa.
Let's talk about being in Iowa, because this was a real passion project for you and something that was really powerful for Iowans of all walks of life who had the opportunity to participate and to listen. Tell me about the vision for that series.
It started as a way to show the spotlight on diversity as part of ethnic diversity, racial diversity. We thought about focusing on Latinos, which we did, a week-long series about what it means to be a Latino in the state. We looked at African-Americans and Southeast Asians and Muslims. But gradually, I expanded that, still focusing on the people that we rarely hear from, the members of society and the population in Iowa whose voices are seldom heard. So I expanded the definition of what being in Iowa meant to include the physically disabled or the learning disabled. What does it mean to be learning disabled in the state? What does it mean to be homeschooled? And we're a lot of people finding out what that means right now. But I did a series on homeschoolers, spirituality, various religions, all of these things I knew very little about myself. And so I used the series to teach myself and hopefully teach other people in the state about these various aspects of life here.
Let's listen to a little bit of one of those pieces from being in Iowa. And of course, we only have a limited amount of time, so we're only going to share just a clip. But this is about Sikhism in Iowa. And you did this piece at a moment where there had been violent acts against Sikhs in the United States. Before we play the piece, just introduce it to us a little bit.
Yeah, there had been a killing in Wisconsin not long before I did this. And I had also just returned from a trip to India and had a chance to go to the Golden Temple, which is the holy shrine of Sikhism in Amritsar, India, which made me kind of a rock star at this place that I visited, because many of them had not been to the Golden Temple. And when I told them I'd been there, their eyes shot wide open. But anyway, that was a beautiful experience for me and made me really want to focus on explaining this religion to Iowans.
Let's listen.
Setting themselves apart through their appearance is risky business in America and can turn deadly, as it did earlier this year when a gunman entered a Sikh temple outside Milwaukee and killed six worshipers. After the murders, 13-year-old J.J. Singh Kapoor, Gurvinder's son, did not remove the small turban he wears to classes at Stillwell Middle School in West Des Moines. He used it as a conversation starter.
I feel that the motive of the man who went to kill all of those people in Oak Creek, all of those innocent people, I feel that the motive wasn't prejudice, but I feel it was ignorance.
Beneath JJ's turban is 4 feet of hair.
Occasionally, I will do a crazy hair day where I'll put my hair down and show them how long my hair actually is.
In this way, JJ engages his fellow students in a short course on Sikhism, the fifth largest organized religion in the world, followed by 500,000 people in the U.S.
That's just a moment from being in Iowa. And
oh, I'm so glad you picked JJ out of that story.
He's now a student at Stanford University.
Yeah.
We've had the opportunity to talk with him a number of times over the years since you first introduced him to us. And really, it's such a powerful moment to think about that series and how you were able to amplify the voices of so many Iowans from, again, all kinds of different backgrounds and in different circumstances. That must have been just such a very special feeling to have that power.
Oh, gosh, it was so... I had a chance to drive the back roads of the state and be reminded how physically beautiful it is, for one thing, but also about, you know, the various small communities that make up. I mean, we always are depicted as being this very white state, and we are. I mean, it's still clearly we are a majority white population, but within this state are some communities that I've found really beautiful, and the really satisfying thing about the whole Being in Iowa series was how welcomed I was into those communities and how willing people were to have me stick a mic in their face. They were so delighted to tell me their stories. And boy, as a radio journalist, there's nothing finer than that.
I want to read a couple of emails that we've gotten here. This is from Paul. And he says, congratulations on your retirement, Rob. I fondly remember your work here at Central College, and I was delighted when a few years after moving to IPR, you came back to campus and led a rich conversation about the immigrant communities in Iowa. Your voice added to many important conversations and helped many of us share our stories. We also have an email from Corey O'Neill, who says, my first job at 16 years old was at the Fine Arts Theater in Des Moines. Rob Dillard was the manager and took a chance on a kid. He was a mentor in both work ethic and life. After traveling around the world, then moving back to Iowa 12 years ago, it's been fun and nostalgic comfort to hear Rob's distinctive voice on IPR. Congratulations. So that was a part of your career we didn't even talk about. You were a theater manager for a while.
That was great to hear from Corey. Yeah. Another interest of mine are movies. And so I had a chance to manage a fine arts movie theater in Des Moines for a few years.
All right, let's go to the phones. Marion is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Marion.
Hi, my name is Marion, but that's okay.
All
and
right.
I'm a classmate of Rob's. And, of
Hi,
course,
Marion.
We just celebrated our 50th class reunion in August. And, of course, it's just an honor to have him in our class and been such a joy over the years. And we will eventually get to celebrate with hugs and cheers.
Yeah. Yeah, I look forward to that big time.
Yeah, Maren, thank
and
you.
I,
oh, thank you for
Maren
your call.
Maren and I had were classmates from kindergarten on, so I've known Maren as long as I've known anyone.
Oh, that's wonderful. We also have this call on the line, Sarah in Muscatine. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't know that I'm still on the line.
You are, Sarah. What would you like to share?
I just wanted to say that I remember traveling to China with Rob Dillard, and when Bob and Billy Ray opened up a friendship for us going there, Pat Bodie and her husband were there, and it was a wonderful time together. And ever since then, you're a comfortable and inspiring person, so I wish you the best.
That's kind of you to say. Thank you.
Sarah, thank you so much for your call. You're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Rob, I want to play just another piece from living in Iowa. And this is from, or being in Iowa, pardon me. And this is from part of your series about being disabled in Iowa, where you tried to help all of us understand what it's like to live in a wheelchair. Let's listen.
She says it's easier traveling the streets of Des Moines in a wheelchair than it was 10 years ago. The city, she says, makes sure there are cutouts in each new sidewalk curb. She heaps praise on one of her favorite spots in town. She loves the design of the newly renovated Franklin Avenue Library.
I'm going to return some books, and I see they've made it very, very easy for anyone, wheelchair users and non-wheelchair users, because the book return is low on the wall.
The counters are lower. Even the bookshelves are lower. But she wants to search the library's online card catalog, and the only computers she sees are difficult for her to use.
It's not angled right for me. I'm going to try to find one that's lower down. I'm looking for a library computer that is lower down than the ones I see on the stand.
For searching the catalog? Mm-hmm. There is one in here.
She's led into another room where a couple of computers are on desktops for easy viewing. This mollifies her concerns. But another minor issue surfaces in the restroom.
The only thing that was a little bit hard were the soap dispensers are way back on the wall, so I couldn't use the soap dispenser.
Again, that was from being in Iowa, from your being physically disabled in Iowa. And not only did you help us understand what it's like to be in a wheelchair in Iowa and accessibility issues, but you also profiled a blind Iowan and Iowans also with learning disabilities and many different people from many different walks of life. You focused on sports, on agriculture. It must have been fascinating to even try to come up with the people that you would profile or the ideas that you would profile. Did people send you stories? Did they hear your pieces on the radio and say, oh, next you need to do this?
Yeah, in some ways, but many of the ideas simply came from what was capturing my interest at any given time. One of my favorite parts of the Being in Iowa series was the week I spent with caregivers. And I was simply attracted to the field to begin with because I was reading so much about how underpaid they are. And of course, in today's environment, we're having that pointed out big time. But I wanted to focus on direct caregivers. I wanted to talk to families who are raising autistic children or a family dealing with dementia. I went to a hospice and talked to volunteers as they help people die more comfortably. I was moved, I think, most by that series of all the ones from the Being in Iowa series. The people I met during that inspired me incredibly.
Rob, you complete work at Iowa Public Radio this week. What's next for you? Other than socially distancing and staying at home and washing your hands.
Yes, yeah, sadly, all of my retirement plans have been canceled. I had some travel I was hoping to do over the next year. I had some parties I wanted thrown in my honor that have been postponed. I will find things to do once this social distancing is lifted. There are many interests of mine. May mean getting back involved in some theater. I don't know. It's a lot of work, and I'm not sure my mind can memorize the lines as well as I once did, but we'll see where that takes me. I read. I will continue to write. I'd like to jot some things down. Maybe not memoir-like, maybe more fiction, writing some short stories. I have a drum set that I hope to. I know nothing about music. I've never played the drums, but at my age, I think it's time I learned. So there'll be things to do.
It sounds like you have a lot of adventures ahead of you. And what do you hope your legacy is here at Iowa Public Radio?
Boy. I hope, as I've said, I gave voice to people who don't often get heard. And I was really, we talked about my crying. I'll get through this. The people I met along the way over the last 10 years especially have enriched my life in ways I'll never be able to describe. And so that's what I hope people got from me is a chance to hear their stories. And hopefully I was the storyteller that made them come become real.
Rob, thank you so much for all of your good work. And I have loved being your colleague for the last decade. And I know that we won't be strangers, even though we are physically apart. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard retires this week. Coming up in just a moment, we'll find out about the new feature film called Working Man. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.